say ain't no good, and I'm crazy as a loon. Cause I shave my head in the morning, and pick guitar in the afternoon. Just like old Chief and Charlie, I like to lay around in the shade. Well, I ain't got no money, but you better believe I got it made. Cause I ain't asking nobody for nothing if I can't get it on my own. If you don't like the way I'm living, just leave this bald-headed country boy alone.
Hell yeah. Thank y'all for tuning into the Josh Terry Podcast. We're still in Nashville, if you can't tell. It's about the time of the week that I get hungover and the content kind of goes downhill. But luckily, we have a great guest with us today. Somebody that I've been looking forward to doing a show with, Miss Renee Blair. Thank you so much.
Hello, hello. Thank you.
Dude, I'm a fan.
Like, thank you.
Yeah. What's crazy is I can't remember. It was sometime last year. Somebody sent me a video of yours off of social media that she's singing or whatever. And I was like, oh, I dig her. She's cool. And then I found out that you were one of the writers on Waiting the Truck.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw when you do it on stage with Hardy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, she's just a badass, dude.
Mm, thank you.
My daughter's obsessed with you, too, by the way. She'll be 13 this year.
Oh!
Yeah, and she thinks you're cool as hell, dude.
Oh, my gosh. That is such a compliment, because I feel like that age or generation officially makes me feel old, because they have their pulse on things that I have no idea what they're even talking about. So if she thinks I'm cool, then I actually feel cool.
It's funny you say that. We were talking about Bobby before the show started.
Mm-hmm.
I did a show with him at Seagull like 2 years ago, and he told me something. And it's just so funny, because it's the longer time goes on, the truer it gets. He said that the most popular stuff is the music that people end up making for like the 12 to 26 year old females.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime my daughter tells me that something's cool now,
yeah,
it ends up being cool as hell 2-3 months down the road. And it's like, how the hell did he know? Like, it's cool. So yeah. She thinks you're cool, dude. You're fucking cool.
Thanks. It's funny. Obviously, like, the greatest songwriter in town is Ashley Gourley. I think everyone at this point knows that. He is the GOAT. He's the Michael Jordan of songwriting, and Gourley tries out a lot of his songs on his daughter.
No,
she's in college now, but that's a little fun fact I've got. My husband has been working with Gourley on some stuff, and there's a song that they did with Mitchell Tenpenny, and that's the one that like everyone's fighting for, because Gourley's daughter's like, you know, Dad, you send me like 100 songs a month. It's probably how many he writes, but that's like her favorite. So he truly, like, regardless of A&Rs and managers and people that be, like, he trusts her judgment.
I'm going to start doing that with Gracie.
Yeah.
That is genius.
Yeah.
I would have never thought of that.
Mm-hmm.
How, by the way, is your husband Jordan?
Yes, Jordan Smith.
Okay. He has a brother.
He does have a brother. Oh, God.
His brother has hit me up a couple times. I didn't realize who he was.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't piece the shit together until recently.
Yep.
You, like, everybody in your family's cool as shit, dude.
Thanks. My brother writes and plays and is a badass. He's, like, played guitar for Keith Urban, and he's a guitar prodigy. And then Jordan's brother, Dane, on, like, the business side.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, they say like attracts like. We've got really hardworking individuals in our crew, but it's cool that everyone kind of has their own lane and their own path.
Yeah, see, ours is opposite. We're all lazy pieces of shit because of me, besides for Missy. Missy's like, she just got back from the gym and shit, and I'm over here eating chicken biscuits and ready for a beer.
Amazing. Well, she's in some Daisy Dukes and looks great in them, so I believe that you were at the gym and that you go often.
Yeah.
It's all about balance, you know.
I don't believe in balance. You just got back from Key West. How was that?
I did. It was good. I'm in a phase right now where I've kind of bit off more than I can chew. You know, with the success of Waiting the Truck, I'm now more determined than ever to prove that, like, that wasn't just a one-off, that, like, I know what I'm doing. I show up, I do my job, I get it done well. And so, you know, I'm in my early 30s, and the one and only time I went to Key West, I was 19. I'd been in Nashville hardly 2 years, and I went down there to network, and I ended up puking all over the island, vowed I would never go back, but now here I am. And it's funny, one of the, like, executives at BMI came up to me the first night and was like, we're just so glad you're here. It's so great to, you know, have all this fresh blood down here that's starting to be successful. And in my mind, I'm like, I thought I was fresh blood when I was down here at 19. Like, can't believe that you're classifying me as that now, but I totally get it.
I'm scared to go. I still have not went. Every year, everybody tries to get me to go, and I just refuse to.
You should go.
I shouldn't.
You should go.
First off, I've got trailer park skin, dude. And I'm telling you, I could wear FPF 1000, and I'm still going to get burnt, so I'm going to be fucking miserable the whole time. And well, I'm going to be drunk.
I will say Duval Street is, like, where everyone hangs out all day, and there's a lot of, like, awnings and shade. If you just walk those sidewalks, you can stay out of the sun. There's no beach in Key West, so you don't have to be, like, in the sun.
Yeah, it's too close to the equator for me, dude. I just know it's not going to turn out well.
I think you're going to go one time, and you're going to have so much fun, you're going to go back every year.
Well, do you know Vaden?
Sounds really familiar.
Vaden, I can't remember Vaden's stupid ass last name now. He's going
to
be mad.
Wait, somebody just said his name to me. Was it you? No.
He's always with Bobby and like that whole group.
Okay.
Anyway, he has been trying to get me to come down there and record the show. He does Smash Farm, one of the rounds. Cool dude. He's helped me out a lot with everything. He's tried to get me just to bring the podcast down there, set it up to where like for the whole week, just have people interchanging all week. Yeah, dude, but I'm telling you, like, oh my God.
Then you really don't have to be in the sun. You get yourself a little house, you post up, make people come to you. It's the dream.
Yeah.
You should do it. You have a whole year now to prep.
I've got a feeling with some of the sponsors we have on the show, I think next year we're going to do it. But, like, I'm probably going to do what you just said.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in the house.
Yes.
The whole time. I don't want to just focus either on just on waiting the truck because I want to know more about you.
Okay.
But if I don't go ahead and get it out the way, it's going to, like, fester with me. Mm-hmm. How did it come about?
So my husband, Jordan Schmidt, Hunter Phelps, and Hardy had to write that day. And they were starting the song. And I don't remember truly if I had to write and I got done early and, like, went to the gym or something. But I just remember I was in workout clothes on my way home. It was, like, 1:30 or 2, which is, like, pretty early in a write. Like, usually writes are from, like, 11 to 4. And my husband texted me and was like, hey, Hart, what are you doing? Or like, when will you be back? Because our studio was at our house. Mm-hmm. And they were writing at our house. And he's like, we're writing a song and Hardy wants to do a duet. And he wants you to sing the vocal. And of course, I was like, probably like cut off a bunch of people in traffic, turn my car around, raced home. Because my husband also is the kind of person that would never, ever, ever, ever suggest me. Like we are very much like, you earn your eat. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
cool, dude.
Yeah, he is not in the game of handouts. He got no handouts on the way of his come up. This dude, you know, has 14 number ones now, and still at 11 o'clock at night, I'm pulling his headphones off of him, and I'm like, we have a baby. You're going to be up in like 6 hours. Like, go to bed. So anyways, we were really super hard workers and want to earn everything. No shortcuts, no fast routes. And so anyways, the fact that he even texted me to come home and like work on this with them, I knew that it had to come from Hardy.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But so they wanted me to kind of sing the chorus. They sent me like a voice note of Hardy kind of singing the chorus. I came home, got in the booth and laid that down. And I was just focused on like, you know, making sure I had the words and the melody of the chorus right to lay that part of it down that I hadn't even let it fully absorb in my like consciousness of what the lyrics were. I was just like, you know, get the song right. And
you didn't get the depth of it yet.
So like as I'm in the booth like singing the chorus, it starts to hit me like, wait, this is serious. Like this is powerful. And I grew up truly being such a fan of, you know, Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, Celine
best
Dion.
Voice of all time is
like
Aretha.
Big. I liked like big divas. Yeah. Like Faith Hill and Martina could belt their asses off. And that's always what I wanted to be or thought I should be. Mm-hmm. And so I just heard like this passionate voice. And so truly my contribution to the song is I asked him, I was like, hey, I'm hearing this part in my head. Can I just try it? And I could already see my husband like putting his like head in his hands,
shit,
like,
face.
Don't ruin our song. Don't ruin our song. Like, stop. You're not allowed to have suggestions. Like, you're not a part of this, really. You're just helping us out. And he was like, fine, go ahead. And so I added all the have mercies. I just heard this woman like passionately like have mercy on, you know, anyways. Yeah. And so then fast forward, months and months went by. Well, we sent Hardy the demo that night. He was crying in his truck, sent us like a 3-page script he'd written that night for the music video, saw the whole thing. Then like 6 months to a year goes by, we hear nothing. And out of the blue, I texted Hardy and I was like, hey, like I had talked to my label, like they'll pay for a promo or the video. Like if you're not going to use or do anything with the song, like can we put it out? Like we'll help and I'll sing it with you, I'll cross promote. And he's like, literally 2 days ago, we got Lainey on it. Because they were originally kind of shooting for a different female.
Yeah.
And then Lainey came on and obviously took it to like realms that far exceeded anyone's expectations. But so then when they got the master back, Lainey's vocal was on it. My husband and Hardy were out writing. It was the weekend that they wrote Mockingbird and the Crow.
Oh, wow.
And Hardy's like, we just got the demo back, or the master back rather. And played it for him. And like, they were both like crying on the bus. And Hardy's like, man, those Have Mercies like made it. And Jordan was like, that was all Renee. And Hardy was like, wait, what? He didn't even know. Cause Hardy actually left early. I crossed paths with him in our kitchen. His kind of contribution in part, he'd already sung the verses. He had another meeting or something to get to. So when I was truly laying down the Have Mercies, Hardy was already gone. And so, yeah, Hardy had no idea that that was my idea. So he asked me if I would want to become part of the song as a writer.
Hell,
and I was
let
me think about it and I'll get back to you.
Yeah, 30 seconds later.
Yeah, right.
Fuck
of
yeah.
course. So yes, they graciously added me as a writer to the song. And you know, sometimes imposter syndrome does strike me, but I also know that, again, back to like the hard work thing, these guys are not in the game of giving out handouts.
Yeah.
And so whenever I do feel like, you know, people saying,
if this
like,
wasn't good, they wouldn't have added it, dude.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that kind of helps me sleep better at night. Like, did I create the storyline? Absolutely not. But obviously I did add something that had enough of value that they all three mutually agreed that they were going to bring me on as a writer. So,
yeah. The Have Mercies part of it, it does like take it to that next level. It
Thanks.
Really does, dude.
Thank you.
I love anything that's it's the church choir. Coming
yep.
in on it. I love anything that's mm-hmm. like that. And even though the song's already powerful, it does. It's like, oh, shit, this takes it somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, so I stacked like probably 5-6 different harmony parts, and I wanted to like let it feel like a gospel choir. So the fact that that's what I did on the demo, that they actually went and got a choir to come and record on the final radio mm-hmm. version, I felt like my vision obviously came through.
I think so.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
What's crazy about that to me is the fact that it sat there for a year. Like, that just makes me think, like, we had Josh Phillips in here yesterday.
Yeah.
And he wrote Dirt Cheap. Cody Johnson's number one right now. And it's like, he sat on it for 2 years. And it's like, it just baffles me that some of the best songs we've never heard are sitting there just waiting.
Yep. I think timing is everything, and also I feel like I blink and 6 months goes by.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the labels and powers that be in town might know that they have a gold mine that they're sitting on, but, you know, to make sense coming off of a certain single, like maybe somebody had just released a ballad, so they don't want to go with a ballad next, so they have to wait for the next song to kind of run that course to drop it. So there's so many different factors and variables that go into when you put something out and why. And I remember at first they were going to do Wait in the Truck the year before, or like 6 or 7 months before they actually ended up dropping it, and try and tie it in with like Domestic Violence Month or mm-hmm. awareness. And then that didn't end up happening for whatever reason. But yeah, it came out at the perfect time. Lainey was also her rocket ship was starting to launch, and I think that even helped it launch more. So I don't think timing could have been more serendipitous than it was.
Yeah, dude, it's cool to me. I've heard you sing it a lot too, though, like from some of the videos and stuff.
Yeah,
Lainey kills it. Don't get me wrong, but you kill it too, dude.
Thanks. I think she, you know, like I said, she obviously did her thing and did it extremely well. But you know, I think what I did on the demo, she really replicated a lot mm-hmm. of like those nuances and the delivery, and just it came out perfect. I have nothing but wonderful and happy feelings about
it. With such a powerful song like that, what's it like being on stage and the crowd's reaction when y'all are just, because it's one of those, it's an all-time song, just because of what it is, the context behind it and everything. What's it like looking out at people? Because people have got to be emotional singing it back to you.
You know, I kind of make a special point before I intro it in my show now, because I've been on the road all year and I close my set with it most nights. Yeah. I either do it as my last song or my second to last song, depending on what the vibe is that night, actually. Yeah. Like, sometimes there's rowdier crowds, and then we close with, like, our rowdy song. Anyways, but, you know, I talk about this on stage in front of a crowd, and I say, you know, you guys spend your hard-earned dollar to be here. This is, you're not at work right now. You want to come here. You want to have fun. And so I like to write songs to perform in front of people to fit the mode that they're in when they're at my shows. So it's so much easier to write the drinking fun songs, because that's what your crowd is doing when they come to see you. So I lean into that usually. But for Wait in the Truck, I like to keep in mind that when the show is over, they have to go home.
Back to real life.
They have to go back to their real life, and it might not be so pretty. And, you know, as corny or cliche as it sounds, I love the phrase that everyone is fighting a battle you know nothing about. And so I intro the song that way, and I'm like, when you guys leave here tonight, you might go back to a place that's not as fun, as pretty as the memories we've made here tonight. And this song kind of goes out to people that are facing something. And I love that about country music, music in general, but I think country specifically gives us as writers a broader outlet to be able to focus on some of those topics.
Yeah, it's the only genre really left anymore that where you can tell a real story.
Yeah, you know, there are the pop songs every now and then that will come through that are like a little darker.
What was the Kelly Clarkson one about her dad?
Was that the Sidewalk one or Breakaway? There was some one she had.
There's one that's about her dad, him not being there. And it is just like, it's
out on the sidewalk. I think it's that one.
I don't know which one it is.
So I don't get hurt of you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a banger.
Right.
But that's one of the few ones I can think of that's like outside of country music. And Kelly Clarkson might as well be country, in my opinion anyway.
She definitely has some Nashville roots. I know she was married to, I think, was it Reba's former stepson.
Yeah, I'm so obsessed with her that they probably won't let me get close enough. I can't probably read her Wikipedia, dude. Like, I'm probably a stalker when it comes to Kelly.
Well, I know she's written a bunch with, like, I don't know if she didn't do like a traditional country album, but I do know she was in town when I was first at Smack Songs, which is owned by Shane McAnally. That was my first publishing deal. It was like the buzz in town was really popular then because Kelly Clarkson was like writing in Nashville for her project.
Yeah. I love stuff like that. I love the emotional songs.
Yeah.
Like, that's what, to me, I'm such a traditionalist when it comes to country that I can appreciate the party songs. I really can. Like, they're fun, whatever.
Yeah.
But more powerful, honest, real songs that's going to rip your heart out, make you cry, or make you want to drink, whatever. Those are my shit. Like, I like the sad stuff.
Okay, so I know, obviously, we're talking about me, but I am curious. What is, like, how did you get involved into even sitting here today, like, with country music? Like, what was, give me, like, however quick or long or whatever.
So I worked in country radio.
Okay.
I started off, I'll kind of give you the summary of it. Back in 2010, I tried to commit suicide, and about 2016, I decided to start putting my story out there on social media because it was something that I needed to get off my chest. I had addressed it in my life, but I felt like God had put it like on me that I was strong enough to survive that. Like, and it was my mission. And it's one way or another to let people know, hey, you're okay or whatever.
Yeah.
So when I started doing that, my social media back then started blowing up. And about a year or two later after that, a big radio show down in South Georgia invited me on. And I did it one time, and about three or four radio stations after that called, offered me a job. I turned it down to start off with. I'm weird about something. Like, I don't want to half-ass anything.
Right.
Like, if I'm going to do something and put my name on it, it's going to be, I'm going to know that I'm doing good. Like, I just started trying to write music because I like writing poetry and stuff. And I wouldn't go to somebody who's a top dog and be like, hey, I want to write with you. Like, I feel like you got to progress. You can't be in T-ball and try to go play with the big boys. Like, it's not right. It's disrespectful in my mind to even think that way. And same thing with radio. So, like, I kind of not took classes or anything, but I was already a huge Howard Stern fan. Like, love, like, that's, I want to be the country music Howard Stern is what I pitched to the radio stations. And at first they were like, we're not going to let you loose on radio. Like, your mouth, your views, all this kind of shit, like, we can't. Well, somebody took a chance, and within 2 years, we had the number one show in the state of Georgia.
That's amazing.
But, like, it was never prep. It was never prep sheets. It was it was never bullshit. Like, I was being me, and people liked it. And it was even like I was talking shit about some country songs on there. And the thing was, people that were listening were like, "Yeah, I don't want to fucking hear this either. Play something else, right?"
Right.
And they respected it and they loved it. Well, during COVID, it was where the co-show host that I had, I was the host, she was co-show host, we had to start splitting time because of COVID.
Right.
So I'd go in there by myself one day, she'd go in there by herself, and we did that for like 6-7 months straight. I have an attitude, and I always say my ego has an ego, and when I think I'm fucking right about something, you can't convince me otherwise. Like, I will be a kamikaze pilot. I will go down in flames. So... I am a white Southern male from South Georgia. I do not believe in the Confederate flag. And when NASCAR banned the Confederate flag, I voiced my opinion on it. Well, you know who listens to country radio? A lot of rednecks that like the Confederate flag. And they refuse to see the other side of the argument. So I made my case for it of why I can respect somebody if they appreciate it, but I won't support it. And I understood why NASCAR banned it. Got death threats, got the Sons of Confederacy where we was from, like, threatening my life. So I didn't go to work for a couple days. Well, when I came back, there's a saying that I've used it my whole career the past 8 years. Morals over money. I will never be wrong.
Yeah.
I will never be wrong if I choose my morals over money in any situation. So when I came back, there were people still wanting to give me hell. And then it rolled into... some other stuff. It was around 4th of July, and this was like when Antifa and everything at that time.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was such a hyper-sensitive time.
It was volatile.
I can't even imagine.
Well, I posted a picture of me online, bare ass, in front of an American flag on the 4th of July, and I told everybody who did not like America, did not like our first responders, our police officers, or whatever, they could kiss my big fat ass. Well, my social media was supposed to be my social media. The radio station, like, I even had to have a disclaimer on it.
Mm-hmm.
That was my second strike. My third strike.
I mean, that's a pretty, like, normal thing to say.
Well, my third, Well, that's what I thought. I thought that the people that were listening and loved me, they ate it up. They loved it. And it was a big deal. Third strike was the straw that broke the camel's back. I used to be like 330 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
I lost a lot of weight at this point in time when this happened, but still have body dysmorphia like a motherfucker. I look in the mirror and I still see 330 pounds to this day.
Well, I still feel 9 months pregnant.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I posted a picture and it was me with a big, like a world heavyweight championship belt, and it was covering my midsection. There was no nudity whatsoever, but like I was 215 at this point and felt really good about myself. And I posted this picture. But I talked about body dysmorphia in the post or whatever. And because I was being crude, that was my third strike. Yeah, they said it was crude that I posted that. But what it was is my co-show host, she was very jealous because she had been there 12 years.
Mm.
And I was getting attention. And I don't like the spotlight. Like, I do not like this being the center of attention at all. I believe that, like, it's supposed to be shared. And the more people you have around you that are successful, that literally makes you a better person.
Yeah.
That success to me is everybody being successful around me. Well, they fired me because of those three things.
Okay.
I went to Jacksonville, Georgia. Not Jacksonville, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, because I needed a breather. Like, I already deal with mental health stuff or whatever. And I was like, I'm not going to rush the decision of what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
Everybody, every radio station in the state of Georgia that was bigger was calling me, and I was like, they're just going to fire me for the same shit. That's what I'd got in my head. I was like, why would I do this to myself? Do I want to go back to a regular job?
Yeah.
Do I want to try something else in my life? So I took a breather, went to Jacksonville, I was sitting at a poker table at the gambling room down there. A dude sitting across from me is from iHeartRadio. And
just by coincidence.
Yeah. This is God's timing, whatever. Mm-hmm. God's plan, not ours. He's sitting there and we're talking, and it gets down to where there's only like three people left at our table. And me and him were talking about everything or whatever. And he's like, dude, he said, I really like you. I'm with iHeartRadio. He didn't say anything till the end. He did not tell me that till we were almost done. And he was like, I think you need to try a podcast. He was like, and if you will, and you do it soon, I'll help you distribute your show to start off with. We'll make sure you're hooked up with iHeart. We'll put you on some of our channels and stuff. Yeah. Anyway, 2 months later, we opened Raising Grace Studios, and he pushed us right off the bat. And within a year's time, we had already had 2 different episodes that was in the top 20 in the world.
That's amazing.
And it just out of nowhere. Like, it was just the people that I was bringing on, but telling real stories. Because I was telling Josh yesterday, I believe in the why of people. Like, you can be the most talented artist in the world, but why should I listen to you?
Right.
Like, I want to know you. I want to support you. I want to support the person you are. So even if you put out something that's subpar, I still want to be passionate about you. And when people start knowing your why, you got a fan or you got a friend or family for life if they yeah. identify with it. And people just have over the past 4 years. They like how I do stuff. They like how I take something that's taboo like mental health and I normalize it. They like how I have took some other touchy stuff.
Yeah.
And Nashville and country music is the thing that I've always loved. Well, I don't really like Nashville, to be honest with you, but I love the people here. I'm a country boy. I don't want
to
ever live
here. Is it the traffic that gets to you? Because it gets to me.
I hate the traffic 100%.
Yeah, it's so bad.
The things I love about being a country boy are in the country.
Right.
Like, you know, the things I love that we sing, y'all sing about in country songs and write about are the things that I actually get to live back home on farmland
right.
and dirt roads and all that kind of shit. And this was just like the natural next step of it. And I love songwriters. I love y'all. Everybody's a little crazy here, but like a good crazy. And where I'm from, if you're chasing a dream or something like this, everybody thinks you're fucking stupid, dude.
Oh, yeah.
They're waiting to say, I told you so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I love that about here. You don't have that really here. You got some people that are delusional as fuck, and you got some people that are so, their heads are so far stuck up their ass that, you know.
Definitely have those.
Yeah. But for the majority of people, everybody's pretty fucking nice and they get each other. You can at least respect somebody chasing a dream here to where
100%.
Back home nobody does.
Even if their dream's different than yours or looks different, like totally, 100%. Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's interesting. I grew up in St. Louis and when I would travel to like LA.
You want a water
or
anything,
York,
by the way?
Oh, I got a little smoothie. Okay. I'm good right now. Thank you, though. You know, where you're from in your hometown, you're usually surrounded by people that are also from that hometown.
Yeah.
And when I first moved to Nashville, I've been here 16 years. Most of the people that I kind of met early on were natives. There was, of course, like some people that had moved here. But now I'm talking like when I first moved here, every waitress, person at the tanning salon, like you name it, all locals. Now Nashville's a town where like they call them unicorns, like if you're truly from here. So I think that's been really, really interesting is, Nashville, it's back to the dreamers. It's like we all are transplants.
Yeah.
Like no one is necessarily from here. So I think we all support each other because we all moved here and felt alone when we first got here because we came here with just our dream.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I think everybody here gets it too, that like you wish you could do this in your hometown, but you can't. And everybody tries to really make you, if you'll tighten this right here, it won't fall.
No, I know. I was making sure. I want to sit up. I have bad posture lately.
It's the one on the other
so
side.
So I'm like, I keep leaning over.
But it's everybody here too. Like, I like how when you find your group, and I don't like cliques, but you got certain people that you're with more than anybody else.
Yeah.
I try to be nice to everyone. But
It's a decent quality.
I'm a cunt though. I mean, that's the bad part. I don't like people really. I like the people I like. I love,
mm-hmm.
and the people that I don't give a shit about, you're just oblivious to
yep.
me. I don't give two shits about you or what you're doing. But I love the fact that when you do find your group here,
yeah.
Everybody tries to make you feel at home here. Like it is mm-hmm. like it's the home you wish you had.
Yeah.
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 It's cool, dude. How did you and your husband meet?
In a write. Yes. We got set up to write. Whenever you go to get a publishing deal, if you know they court you or they a lot of times publishers, you know, if anyone listening is like an aspiring songwriter, typically a company's not just gonna hear some of your songs and be like, okay, we'll sign you. They'll want to put you in with some of their writers just to mm-hmm. see how the session goes. I thought it was like because they wanted to sign me, but really I didn't realize it's because if they put you with their people will go back and tell them how you did. And I wasn't even thinking like that, but yeah. they put me in a write. And anyways, it was me. Jordan was not at that company. The other guy, the third in the room, was at Smack at the time. And it's funny. So the three of us wrote, we all hit it off like as a threesome. Like we've all gone on to write like most of my first album together. But the very next day, they wrote What Ifs Together by Kane Brown. And they actually texted me too and were like, hey, like we crushed yesterday's session. We think we want to get a girl on this. Like, do you want to come do Lauren Elena's part? And there's more to that story that I can't really share. We'll tell you later, but yeah.
I'm obsessed with her.
Yeah, she's wonderful. One of the best voices truly in country. She actually, I'm trying to write for her a little bit right now because she just signed a new deal to Big Loud and they said they're looking specifically for up-tempos, which is where I feel like as a writer I thrive. Sometimes people are scared to do up-tempos. Because, I mean, it's like, how much drinking, short skirts, like, you know, can you put into a song for a girl? It's all kind of the same stuff. But, yeah, I've been trying to write for Lauren Elena. I think she's, like, one big old hit away from, you know.
She's one of those that I've just never figured out how come. And she's big.
Yeah.
Obviously. But her voice is just so good.
It's insane. Like, it's unfair. So it's so wonderful.
Yeah. She always, every time I think of her, I think of Kelly Pickler.
Yeah.
I guess because of the idol shit or whatever.
That. But they're both very bubbly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're two of my faves.
Mm-hmm.
I could listen to Kelly Pickler's whole first album, the one that's got a...
Red High Heels?
Yeah, that one's not my fave, but...
Well, you look what's like a the Red one? High Heel guy.
God damn it, it's so fucking good.
I know what you're talking about.
It's a slower song. Didn't You Know How Much I Love You?
Oh, yes,
oh,
yes,
my
yes.
God.
Oh, so good. So,
so good.
So
good, dude.
I was obsessed with Kelly Pickler.
Me
she
too.
She was really popular during like what I call like the blonde era. I used to yeah. be bleach blonde, believe
no,
it or not.
Dude.
Yes, I'll show you a picture. It's embarrassing. But that was back when like Paris Hilton and The Simple Life, Jessica Simpson was on, you know, during her
low
doing her
cut
TV
Hollister
show.
Jeans and all
yes.
that bullshit.
And Kelly Pickler came right in there and I was obsessed with her.
I've always been obsessed with women with short hair. Anyway,
mm-hmm.
and whatever the fuck this is that
she had
on
bob.
Back then.
It's called the bob. Yep.
I'm telling you, obsessed. Mm. I'm, yeah.
So wait, when you say you like short hair, are you, but not like 90s mom hair? Or do you like that
hair.
Too?
What is 90s mom
like,
hair?
You know, like when you think of like a mom from the 90s, there's that like almost like Princess Diana haircut, like the short.
Oh, you're talking about like the pixie shit?
Yeah, you don't
whatever?
Like that though, do you?
Oh no, that would be
okay.
hot too.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, that'd probably be hot, too.
Because my husband will randomly see a picture like that and be like, if you ever do that,
but
we're
like,
done.
I think it just depends on the person,
mm-hmm.
obviously. But more than just your looks, I think it's your personality. If you have that hair, you got to have a banging-ass personality. you have to. Or I'm going to be like, what's up, bro? Like, there's no middle with that,
no.
dude.
No,
Josh is just looking for responsibility, somebody to take care of him a little bit.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's a mom look.
No, absolutely. I tell my girlfriend all the time that when she does like the mom look,
mm-hmm.
that does it for me.
Great.
I don't know what it is about that. Like,
yeah.
a hot mom is like the best shit. Like a classy
it's a
hot mom.
Kink. We get
I should have worn my MILF hat.
Speaking of that, speaking of that, how's being a mom now?
It's good.
How old is your kid?
9 months old
nine
officially
months.
As of a few days ago. Okay. So now officially out as long as he was in, which is terrifying. But I have this like weird soul, I guess, where I remember when I first moved to town, like Luke Bryan had just had his first kid or two. I think they're both pretty close in age, but like then his career skyrocketed.
Yeah.
And I've seen so many men, like look at Thomas Rhett. He's kind of built a brand around his family.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And I do feel like women kind of have a different stigma around them. Like you have to pick one or the other. And while I was pregnant, I had my first number one with Wait in the Truck. My music, for me personally, like the stuff I'm putting out as an artist, was really starting to take off and do some things. And I felt this weird anger come up that I wasn't expecting, where I was like, I don't want anyone to ever make me feel like I need to choose between my dream or my child.
I don't know why you'd have to.
I don't know. Maybe it's like an old school way of thinking that some people subconsciously are still stuck in. I don't know how to exactly describe it, but I felt this weird pressure now that I almost am working harder because I'm a mom, where I want my son to see like my mom's a badass. So I put together my very first ever headlining tour, and I've been on the road almost every single weekend this year. And my baby was born in August, so I kind of took a lot of the fall. I didn't tour at all in the fall, just to be a mom, you know, get used to what that even is or is like. And then I was like, okay, once the new year starts, I'm going to hit the ground running. And because I felt like I had to make up for some lost time of being pregnant. I did one tour while I was pregnant in the spring of last year and early summer, but I don't know. I love being a mom, but this past like 10 days, I was gone at Stagecoach. I got to do Wait in the Truck with Hardy at Stagecoach, which was the highlight of my life. But I was gone for, you know, 3 or 4 days, then flew home for one day and then just left again for Key West. And so this was like a 10-day stretch where I was home for literally one day. And that crushes me. Like, that makes me feel this guilt. So on the flip side, I'm like, I want to work hard enough that one day I can have a bus to bring my son out so that I can spend all day. Because you're essentially on the stage for an hour of your day. It's not that much time. Like, so I hate being away from him all day and really feeling like I'm only, you know, working for an hour. Yeah. So I would love to work hard enough to achieve my own bus so that I could bring my son.
Yeah, I definitely wouldn't feel bad about it at all. I mean, you're building something for your kid. I mean,
I know.
Yeah, and like my thing is with my daughter is I don't feel like I fail when I'm on the road unless I stop rushing to get home.
Right.
Yeah, like if it's where like I decide to stay an extra day
for
bullshit reasons instead of getting home to her, then I'm like, oh, I'm letting my kid down. Then.
Yeah.
But no, you're working, dude. I mean, it's the same thing as anybody else that's working a 9-to-5.
I know. So I have to keep that in mind, and I try to. You know, thankfully I've got like a really good crew of people around me that, you know, we all, if we're feeling down, we know who to call and we don't stay down long.
Yeah, dude.
And that's great to have, you know, people you really love and trust. And plus my mom and my husband's mom both live here, so they can take turns, you know, picking up.
And they probably love it.
They do.
Yeah.
I do feel bad because Jordan is such a workaholic too. And I know he probably can't get work done like he would like to when he's,
it's got to make you better, though, because even, like, with me. Mm-hmm. So, like, the name of my studio is Raising Grace Studio. Mm-hmm. My daughter's name is Gracie. So, it's like a double meaning for me. It's somewhere between Raising Hell and Amazing Grace. But also, everybody gets to see me raising Gracie.
Yeah.
Like, because she's part of everything I do. Like, that's why another reason I won't move up here.
Yeah.
And it would help my career so much. But being away from my child would ruin me. Like, mentally, I'd be fucking horrible, dude. Mm-hmm. And, like, with me, she makes me better, though.
Yeah.
She, like, I would imagine as a songwriter and singer, too. Like, yeah, you probably got, like, some down moments, but there's no, and you might have some frustration because you can't get something done, but they got to make you better at what you do.
No, well, it's interesting. So, you know, I told you I've been here 16 years. I've written songs every day for as long as I can remember. And I always have been so lucky and blessed to like go show up anywhere on Music Row or wherever we're writing and be like, hey, we're writing a song today. But now I'm like, I am paying someone to be at my house. So we are writing a song.
Yeah.
Like, and I do feel like it creates, I don't know if you also feel this, like when you're here, are you more productive than maybe before you were a dad? Because it's like, I got to make the most of my time. So you just have more that you're working for.
Yeah. I wasn't doing any of this before she was born.
Okay.
So like,
how old is she, you said?
She'll be 13 in
13,
September.
That's right.
So I wasn't, but I know that it makes me work harder.
Yeah.
I know it makes, like, because I don't care if anybody else on this planet thinks I'm fucking cool. I don't care to be. Yesterday, and this is what my daughter did yesterday, I'll show you. She did this shit yesterday because she's an asshole. She is me, and it pisses me off so bad. She does not, anytime somebody comes up and acknowledges me or the show or whatever, she's like, shut the fuck up, pretty much. Like that. She cannot stand it. She sent me a thing yesterday. She said, I posted you on my Instagram story to show you some gratitude. And it was from where I did a thing with Make-A-Wish in Atlanta. Uh-huh. I hosted an event for them this past weekend. And that was like her little nod to me, like, I'm proud of you.
So that's
what I want her to view me as. Like, I know if I get up here and I just waste time.
Right.
And I'm not being productive, that I'm letting her down.
Yeah.
Because, if I'm going to do this and I'm going to take time away from my daughter,
yeah,
I better be fucking working.
Exactly.
I better be creating something and doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
Dude.
Amen.
Yeah.
I think that parent guilt's always going to sit with you, though, because I've been in the military for the last 4.5 years, and I carried a picture with me, because the days that when I would go to the field or when I was in Japan, I carried a picture with me, and I put at the top of it, I said, remember your why. Because that was the whole point of me going to the military. And now I built my brand because I've been away for so long.
Yeah.
I built my brand so I can travel. He can start coming with me because he's at that fun age.
How old is you have a son?
He's 10.
Mm-hmm. Amazing.
But he's just like how you were saying. He's an asshole and he is very much me. I'm getting my karma already, so I can't imagine teenage years. But it's like always, you're always going to have that mom guilt.
I have heard that first children, the girl is like the dad and the boy is like the mom. I saw, I don't know, some Instagram, my algorithms are all interesting right now. But they said oldest little boys turn into their mom's soul and oldest little girls are their dad's soul.
Just curious. I don't think I've ever asked a parent on the show before. Would you want your son to end up being in this industry? Knowing the heartbreaks and bullshit that comes along.
No. Yeah. I would have always said hard no, because listen, 16 years in this town, it has sucked the soul out of me, but somehow it finds its way back.
Yeah.
Every time. But I would have said no. However, Jordan is on his laptop on the coffee table doing Pro Tools and the kid is already staring at it. So I do think his father being who he is, you could not go to school and get the kind of education that Jordan would teach his own son.
Yeah,
so if he wants to do it, he better pay attention to dad. And but it depends on what he exactly wants to do.
Badasses, dude.
But yeah, I mean, like, cause Jordan would say, like, even if you want to be an artist or a writer, like be able to build your own tracks. And like Jordan would sit and cause Jordan actually, his parents, they had a band in Minneapolis where he was from, and they were like a live local band. Like when Eddie Money and people like that came through their hometown, his parents were like the local opener.
Yeah.
And his dad back in the 80s and early 90s had like one of the only or first ever like recording studios where he got gear in their house. So he would record their band, and Jordan kind of learned from his dad on that aspect. But his dad obviously didn't do it on a scale that we do now.
Yeah.
So if Jordan could take that little information from his dad, and this is what he's built, we kind of joke that we're like, well, our kid might actually like be the next Max Martin or something crazy, because he's just born in a house where there's new songs being written every day.
Well, it's like I try to talk about like the bad shit in our lives that has been normalized, but it's also the opposite. Like if you have generational trauma, you also have to have generational success.
Yeah.
Like, I would imagine growing up in a house like that, would have been fucking the best for me. I would have ate that shit alive. It's got to be your kids going to love it, dude.
Yeah, I don't think we'll push him. I mean, we've talked about it. Like, we won't push him into it, but if he naturally is curious and, like, wants to try it out, we'll do it.
Guitar in his hand by 3.
Oh, he's already, like, tapping.
Yeah.
He loves guitar. I just selfishly want him to play me piano every day. When I'm old in a nursing home, he could just come and
Well, that's fucking adorable. That's the cutest thing I've ever heard. Like, just thinking about a kid in a nursing home playing for his mom.
I think that's really good for just a kid to have those skills in general.
Yeah.
I really do. Like, even if they don't take it anywhere. Like,
yeah.
It's just, you know, those are skills, like, we grow up and we just wish we had them. So,
absolutely.
Do it.
Yeah, I wish I would have been taught it at a young age.
Yeah.
100%.
It's definitely easier to pick up any skill when you're a kid. I didn't realize that as a kid. But, I mean, foreign languages or instruments. Like, I remember in third or fourth grade, you take a class or two, and it was easy. And then now, like, I try to – we're going to on our honeymoon on Friday to Italy. And, like, even saying, like, hello in Italian. I'm like, it's going to take me a week to figure out how to say hello.
You just got to talk louder.
I guess.
That, I'm telling you, my granddad, that he doesn't know that there's other languages. He thinks people are fucking deaf. Like, he'll look at somebody and they'll say something in a language and he'll be like, no. No. Top shelf. Liquor. Like, it's like, he doesn't fucking understand.
And he gets by.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He pisses a lot of people off.
That's amazing.
God, it runs in our family that we are just the best at pissing people off.
That's our love language, truly. Like, if we're nice to you, we probably don't really like you. If we give you shit, like, you're in the club.
1,000%. Mm-hmm. If you hear me being nice to someone, it's because I want you to fucking go away. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm not talking shit to you,
yep,
go the fuck away.
Exactly.
Yeah. But also, like, I was telling you before we started the show, like, you can talk as much shit as you want to me because I love it. I absolutely love when somebody gets that side of me,
mm-hmm,
to where there's a lot of sensitive ass people.
Yeah.
Especially... Oh. Especially this is...
I call them pussies.
Oh, they are pussies.
Pussies.
I've had several female songwriters on the show, and it's always amazed me. It's about only... you're the one out of the 10 who doesn't get offended easily, and I can tell that. But there's most people, like, women are very, very touchy, especially the songwriters.
I feel like they must be newer to Nashville, because I think just the town in general, all the no's, it just breaks you of that. Like, I don't get offended by anything. I don't know. Maybe I should.
It is the younger ones. Because, like, especially, like, our rounds at Live Oak,
mm-hmm,
I take everything I do very seriously when it comes to this. I'm very picky about who I put on those shows.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not going to listen to you, I'm not going to put you on a podcast. I'm not going to put you on one of my rounds. It has to be someone that I actually like. And even if you don't have the best voice,
yeah,
you have to have depth to what you're writing. And there's a lot of these female and younger dudes too. I shouldn't just single out women here. A lot of these younger guys will send me stuff, and they send it all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
They find out that when we do the rounds, they're like the show's in the top 1% in the world and all this shit. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm finna use this dude as a stepping stone. I'm finna blow him up, yeah, and all this kind of stuff. And they don't realize, like, I'll take somebody. I'd rather sit here with Bobby. And Bobby, mm-hmm, has no social media. He does not give two shits about it. Or somebody like that that's going to be real.
Right.
That maybe everybody else is going to be like, who the fuck is that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why am I listening to this? But for people like me and you, we're like, it doesn't get better,
right,
than that stuff. And it's just real and there's depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of these young folks, they send me shit. And it's like, it's not bad. Like, I've learned to say it differently because when I first started doing this, I was saying it wrong. I was saying it like, I'll never fucking, like, I don't like that music. I don't want to deal with it, whatever. Yeah. But it's like, that's good. They're obviously killing it. Like, there's some bigger artists that I would not have on the show because it's not my cup of tea.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's bad. They're obviously hustling and doing something right and grinding, yeah, away, but it's just not for me.
So I want to tell you a quick story of something that just happened in Key West.
Okay.
And this has happened to me like many times at shows. And obviously what you're saying, I know it's happened to you in, yep, ways. So I get off stage, and obviously Key West is a songwriters festival, so it was a writer's round. And this guy, we singled him out in the crowd immediately as like the fun guy in the crowd. He was wearing an American flag like unitard.
Yeah.
Like, he was down there ready to party. He was, like, cheering all the right ways to all the, you know, jokes we were making, all the right songs. He just had a fun personality. Mm-hmm. He made, you know, when people, sometimes people in the crowd can make the show more fun for you as the artist. This guy did that. So I get off stage. He walks around to the backstage as soon as I get off. And I was, like, excited because I was like, this dude had fun. Like, I think he's coming over to, like, ask for a picture, to, like, say, hey. He goes, I got words. I got lyrics. what now? And I was like, dude, like, do you want the honest answer? I was kind of over it. I was like, do you want the truth? He's like, yeah. And I was like, I've been in Nashville for 16 years and I just had my first number one. So even if I give you the best advice in the world, or I take these songs with you and I help you craft them to the point where they're a demo. Because at first I was like, do you even have a melody or like a recording of them? That's a great place to start. He's like, no, but I got words. And I was like, I could help you with 2, 3, 10 songs, but are you willing to write 2,000 more? And are you willing to do that every day for 16 years and maybe have one song that a lot of people know? And I kind of saw the wind go out of his sails, but it's like, it's so true. It's like the kids you're saying that send you songs. It's not even that you need to be like, that's a bad song, or say, keep going. But like, are you willing to just not care about that specific song and detach? Because you just have, it is a numbers game. Actually, Jordan, I think it was Jordan. Was it? No, it was someone down in Key West. We were talking about the Lara Veltz podcast. My husband was recently on it. Lara Veltz, if you don't know who she is, she's one of the most successful songwriters in town. She wrote The Bones for Maren Morris, like tons of stuff. She is a Grammy nominated, maybe even won a couple. Incredible songwriter. Yeah. So she was talking about Ashley Gourley's batting average. She's like, for the number of songs that man writes, he still has like a shitty batting average.
Absolutely.
And that's Ashley Gourley, and he's the best.
Yeah.
So that's my advice to just songwriters. And when I get on that tangent, it's like, cool, send me a song. Don't care. It could be the best song in the world. A lot of times as songwriters and artists, the song that we think is the best, people care about the one that we don't even like.
Absolutely.
So that's like the only thing I could say to anyone in Nashville that's trying to make it or even has made it and now doesn't know if they can keep it going. It's like the only way to remain relevant is just to continue to show up.
Yeah, you got to be okay with not getting an answer.
Yeah.
With stuff like that. It's especially like to me. If you never heard me talk about, like, growing up, I loved writing poetry. I got a poem that was published in, like, Young Poets of America when I was in middle school. But I was playing, it was, like, during baseball season when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the whole baseball team, like, picked on my ass. Like, oh, you write poetry, fag, like, all this kind of stupid shit.
Say, where'd you take that bat?
What? I should have beat the shit out of them is what I should have done. But I didn't. I let it, like, hinder me. So mm-hmm. I never thought about doing anything like that again till like 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I was telling that story to the guys from Creative Vets.
Mm-hmm.
We do some stuff with them or whatever. And one of my buddies was like, would you want to try to write a song? Like, you're witty. You come up with different shit. She sit from a different perspective. And I was like, yeah. I was very timid. I'm still very fucking timid of even like throwing an idea out there. But I had somebody tell me, he's like, look, dude, you're going to have 1,000 bad ideas that you think are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They make no fucking sense to nobody else. You're not going to be able to put it into a melody. You're not going to be able to put it into 3 minutes. Like, some ideas would take 10 fucking minutes long for a song to make it play out. It just doesn't work.
Yep.
Doesn't mean it's bad, but you have to get over the fact that when you send something to somebody, if they don't respond, they're not thinking it's bad. It just doesn't work.
Yep. You know, like, we just spoke, Jordan and I got asked to speak at NSAI for the Tin Pan South week that they do every year, which is another songwriters festival thing, but it's in town. And we spoke at Belmont and someone said, so what if a publisher writes back and like doesn't like the bridge of this song? And Jordan and I are like, well, you can sit and dwell on it and you can fix the bridge and try to make that publisher happy, or you can just go write another song.
Yeah.
Like a true great songwriter can always write another song. You always will have more in you. Go write 100 more.
Or shelve it for a little while.
Yeah.
What's the fucking Miranda Lambert song?
House That Built Me. 16 years it was written, and then I think they revised it like 7 years later and finished it.
Yeah.
And then it came out like 10 years after that.
Yeah, like some good ideas just take fucking time. Like it could take 20 years to to find the right way.
Yeah, and I will say that is a little bit disheartening about the TikTok culture that we live in now, of labels saying, oh, they'll sign something if it's hot, because, you know, you can see in real time people reacting to it or not. But also, like, farting videos get great reactions and get spread really quick, and then people forget about them the next day. So, like, I think it's really important to keep in mind, like, you're creating art and you're creating something you're passionate about. Like, yes, numbers are certainly important, but there is a, just like with raising a child, it takes a village. There's a lot that goes into every aspect of everything.
Yeah, but those numbers to me don't define how good something actually is.
Right.
Yeah, like that's a false metric.
Like, I think so.
Absolutely not. And I get shit all the time because, like, I have to post on TikTok just like everybody else and all that kind of stuff. So people, because we have a decent following on there, people automatically like, oh, he loves the TikTok stuff and all these artists and shit that comes off. I love about one out of every 30.
Sure.
The rest of them I get really pissy about because it's like, oh, you build a following not doing music and now you're going to decide to do music because you have a following.
Yeah.
I have pissed several folks off because, like, no, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it's, oh shit. It takes away. To me, it takes away from people like you that have been busting your ass for 16 years, that have earned it, that have, I love the people, the journeymen, the ones that have played the smoky bars, the ones that have played for fucking 20 people for $100 for 4 hours. Those people have staying power. Those people know what it's like. These people that are just blowing up and making it off social media right now, they've never played those rooms. They're going to be a flash in the pan. And also, they don't have the life experience that you and other folks have to where, oh, I've got 16 years of grinding it out. People are going to relate to my songs because that's real life.
Yeah.
You talking about, oh, I got $1 million now and I got a number one because of TikTok and now I got all this shit. Like, who can identify with those songs?
That's true.
Nobody.
Yeah. Very true.
They identify with badasses like you.
Thanks.
Well, I know you only had like an hour, so we'll go ahead and cut it air if you want to. But I mean, I'll keep rolling.
I will say I should probably close because I know you'll appreciate this. Yeah. I want to talk about Hill Betty for a second.
You go ahead.
So Hill Betty is the name of the tour I've been on all year, and it's this brand I'm building. I feel like maybe were you like kind of back in the day a fan of like the Girls Gone Wild, Coyote Ugly, Playboy era.
Look at me.
I
like a whore.
Yes.
I love women. Trust me. I'm right there.
Well, because I want to kind of just get your opinion or your take on it too. Because I have been in town for 16 years and part of me thought that I needed like shit sparkles on all my clothing in order to like look like all the other girls that were working at the time through the amount of time I've been here. But then I have this like loud, offensive, kind of disgusting side to me. And I mean, I will say like my dad is a hillbilly redneck, like very white trash, but like I'm obsessed with him. He's my favorite person in the world. And so anyways, I burped in front of my husband like 3 days after we got married and it was like a long, deep roar, gross man burp. And I was like, sorry, my hillbilly's showing. And I was like, in the same breath, I was like, fuck that. Like, Billy is a dude, and girls feel like hillbillies, too. And then I was like, where's the Hill Betty? And it, like, literally just fell out. And I was like, oh, my God, that's my identity. That is it. Like, holy shit. Like, Beyonce has her alter ego with Sasha Fierce. Or really, to me, it's more like a female of what Granger Smith did with Earl Dibbles. The Yee Yee brand is massive now. And then we came home, because we were out of town when this happened. But I started noticing that all the bachelorette parties downtown, which have, you know, obviously infested Nashville, they, you know, might go home and be a secretary or first grade teacher, work at the dental office, like something very wholesome and respectable. But when they're in Nashville, they're puking, they're blacking out, they're loud, they're trashy, they're crazy. And so I really thought about it and I was like, well, that feels so authentic to me. Like I'm always the loudest girl. People tell me to shut up everywhere I go. Like I don't even realize I'm loud. I'm just loud. It's just who I am. But anyways, so I was listening, like when I drove by the party buses and they were either listening to like old school hip hop or current hip hop and then like Gretchen Wilson and Shania. And where I feel like females are in country right now, there's like, you know, I know Megan Maroney has like the emo or sad girl country. There's even like a big curated Spotify playlist that's like sad girl country. But there's not really like a party girl. Lainey has some more up tempos, but hers is more like her hippie lane that she talks about and what she represents. So anyways, I just have been kind of in the last year silently under the radar building this Hill Betty brand.
That's
and
cool.
The girls that like really resonated with that older Playboy. Like remember, I don't even know, I'm sure you girls know. Remember that when we used to go to the tanning bed and we'd put like the Playboy stickers on?
Yeah, I do.
It's girls that did that. Like
yes,
any girl that did that is a Hill Betty.
We will take 10 of whatever you're selling.
Amazing.
There's a reason why most of y'all have had a ring if you don't have one now.
Exactly.
If you have that mentality, there's some good shit that comes along with your crazy ass.
Like, I'm identifying so hard. Like, I have a whole online, like, you know, alter ego persona.
Great.
Like, it's not me in real life. In real life, I'm a physical therapist. I'm a doctor. I'm a professional.
Oh.
But online, I'm a fucking hoochie.
And oh!
I love it. And I love it.
Well,
so,
well, one thing, one reason why, like, I believe that we can't, sex sales, it doesn't matter how you break it down, right? It's the number one selling tool across the board with every fucking thing. And when somebody embraces it, but does it in a, I'm not going to say classy way, classy is the wrong word to use there.
Confident.
But confident.
Yeah.
Like, yep. And it's not like in your face, but it's still like sexy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong with it. Women are going to think that, like, you're empowering them, you're empowering yourself, and also men, we're fucking stupid. We are cavemen. We see ball, won't hit ball. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't help it. Like, it works all the way around.
There's a difference between, like, you know, work in the streets versus just being a confident, sexy person
in
general.
Yeah, I agree.
And there's a difference. And if you exude that and you show that, then,
Since I started like this back in the day, I have this stupid rule. I don't know if I ever told y'all. Call it the Brett Favre rule. Y'all remember Brett Favre?
Of course we do.
Of course.
Okay. Brett Favre had a talent that I don't think anybody really realized he had that made him so popular. He made men want to be him, and he made women want to sleep with him.
Yep.
Success.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what, like, I've always called it with me, the Brett Favre rule. Like, I've got to make women like me, but I got to make men want to live the life that I live in one way or the other. And it's like, okay, when you can do that, and that's what it sounds like with that,
well,
it works.
Feel like it's also when I am like a little more like loud or obnoxious, I can lean into like, oh, that's the character. Because like me, I'm like a mom. I go home. I like love to cook
Same.
And make like salads and chicken.
I'm a mom before.
We go
take care of our kids, but you know, when it's mom time.
So I feel like it gives me a little bit of an excuse to like embrace that, you know, a little
it
bit.
It also gives you
trash.
Something else too, if you hadn't realized it. If you embrace that character, you can do content and shit as that character.
Right.
And that's not you saying it.
100%.
That's the 100%. Character saying
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Yeah, there's a huge difference. Me in my personal life, there's a lot of shit I can't say. Like, I can do whatever fuck I want on the show because I own everything with it. But if I walk to Live Oak on tomorrow night or whatever and I say some stupid shit on stage, I get in trouble.
Yeah.
But on social media, I can play a fucking character.
Mm-hmm.
And I can say whatever I want.
Yeah. That's what
and
it
as
is.
Long as I, like, because I don't believe you can be canceled. I really don't. I think your social media can get deleted, but I don't think you can be canceled as an individual anymore. I think as long as you are.
It takes something like highly illegal and criminal, I think, is like the only thing you can't really come back from at this point.
Anything with kids, which those people need to fucking die anyway.
Yeah.
Like, the only answer to those son of a bitches is tall trees and short ropes. But, like, we'll get on that. I'll kill everybody. Yeah.
I want to hear more about the.
Yes.
I was just saying, like, that's what the name, so that whole album pretty much top to bottom is like geared for when girls are in that mode. I mean, Pam Anderson obviously was like a sex symbol, but you know, she was in Playboy, but like then she still had her two kids. And if you've watched her documentary recently, I was so inspired. Like, she really was like, I never cheated on Tommy. I wasn't a slut. People thought I was because of how I looked, but like, she ran a business. She ran a home. Like, she did a, you know, and I just think there's kind of a void missing right now in the country marketplace. And so when I had this light bulb off, I'm like, this is who I've always been. But now it makes sense of how I can actually explain it to people, like what I'm trying to build and what it is. And so I'm really excited about this chapter for me. It feels super organic.
It seems like that's the authentic side of you. Though,
yeah,
right?
It is. And I never knew burping in front of my husband would be the ticket to figuring my shit or my life out, but that's kind of how it happened. And I don't think it gets more authentic than that. So.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, I think like you, like your brand, it says that I'm a badass, but I can still take care of shit that I need to. Like I can be that mom. You don't have to fit in one norm with like what society says, especially
moms
as mom
feel
as women.
Like that. Like we don't want to stay at home and you know, and we can do that.
Right.
We're fucking good at that.
Absolutely.
We will do that. We will handle that. And then we're going to go handle what we need to handle. Yep. And we're going to be ourselves too while we do it.
I think I think it's another way to say like I'm a boss bitch too.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Trying to be or just figuring out one day at a time.
Yeah.
But yeah,
well, you're doing
just
a great job,
tracking.
Though, dude.
Thank you.
I'm excited to see some of that hillbilly stuff.
Yes. Thanks.
I think that is an avenue I have not seen anybody do either.
That's really interesting.
And that's what's always cool to me. I like the fact the way you asked that question, too, about like the girls gone wild stuff and all that kind of shit. Because I do think, I told Allie Colleen this like 2 years ago when the first show I ever did with her. I think there's a movement coming with women in Nashville.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the outlaw woman movement like we had with the outlaws back in the 80s and 70s.
I hope so.
But it just seems like...
I want it.
Yeah, I do too. That's the thing because I know I love sad girl country, but I also like when somebody's just a badass.
Right. And listen, I truly believe like we all as humans feel a wide array of emotions. Yeah. We get sad, we get angry, we get happy, we fall in love, we fall out of love, our heart is broken.
Yeah.
And sad girl country is wonderful. There is totally a place for that because girls get sad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just think there's not like a lot of music right now that's embracing that moment in a woman's life when she's on a Friday night getting ready with her girlfriends and ready to like go tear up Broadway.
It's funny you say that because we had a show 2 months ago, and it was Allie Colleen, Lexi Lou, I think is her last name. I can't remember. Terry Ann Pfister, Emma Zink, and Kenzie Coppins. I'm literally trying to remember what I said. And we got on the subject of where, even though, like I said, everybody likes Sad Girl Country, like, where's the stuff to where, like, you don't have to sing about heartbreak if you're a woman.
Right.
You don't have to sing about whatever. Like, why aren't we doing more of... Hey, you realize there's more to me than just fucking crying, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's cool. Like, I didn't really think of it from that perspective, but they even brought up, like, some of the stuff that Faith Hill and Trisha Yearwood was doing, like, back in the 90s, to where it was like, oh, you're just a badass.
Yeah.
And I love that.
Well, this is also the 20-year anniversary of Redneck Woman.
Yes.
And so I feel like what a hillbilly is essentially... a redneck woman just repackaged 20 years later as like a new fresh take on it. But it's not reinventing the wheel. I mean, it's something that like, you know, 30 years ago, 40 years ago, there were redneck women. And I think 40 years in the future, there will be too. I'm just calling them hillbetties.
I think it's different in this aspect. I hate redneck woman. I do. And it might be because my fucking mama had to play it 5,000 times when it came out.
You hate
but
everything.
I do hate. I literally do hate everything. But I think with that one, men sometimes don't necessarily like that whatever, the redneck one part. But I could see where what you're talking about, guys could even back it and be like, oh, that's fucking cool, dude.
Yeah, I think, because again, like I would say Pam is kind of like my muse for some of it, like
I
the barbed wire stuff.
I felt so bad for her after that documentary. And,
I know.
And it made me...
Yeah.
As a girl dad anyway,
yeah.
I'm starting to realize there's stuff that I've done in the past that is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm starting to realize, like, there's shit I've said
that
is not okay. And when I watched that documentary and I saw the way that they talked to her on that talk show, when they literally just was like, didn't treat her like a fucking person.
Yeah.
And like,
they're ruthless.
Yeah. Like, and I've always liked her, but I felt bad for her and it made me love her more. The fact that she kind of did it with a smile, but also I wish she would have got up and slapped the fuck out of somebody.
Yeah, I will say, I think part of going through that, I mean, I've been through similar type things, but obviously she experienced it on a way larger scale than I'll even begin to fake like I understand.
Yeah.
You do develop some thicker skin from it, though. So, like, I am an eternal silver linings person. Like, the worst thing in the world could happen, and I would... My brain initially goes to where is the silver lining? And so that's what I'm trying to do right now is I think that just probably made her tougher and want to even further prove them wrong, that she wasn't that kind of person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. You're cool. I'm glad that that's your mentality with that.
I love
Thanks.
That.
You're
I love
a badass,
that.
Dude.
Thank you.
Before we get off here, drop your social medias. Let everybody know where they can find you, projects and everything coming out.
Yes,
and all
just,
that good shit.
At Renee Blair, R-E-N-E-E-B-L-A-I-R, and Hill Betty. We got all the Hill Betty stuff starting to launch. They actually sold some of it at Stagecoach.
Hell yeah, dude.
Which is what brought me out there to do
you
it.
You look amazing.
Thanks.
Jordan, if you're listening, I'm not hitting on your wife. You look amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, it was awesome. But yeah, Hill Betty's coming. We're taking over PBR for CMA Fest and calling it Hill Betty House.
Let's go.
We're going to have some Hill Betty hoedowns and some line dancing, and it's going to be
sick. Well, anything that y'all need promotional-wise or anything like that, you let me know.
If you need a line dance instructor for the country dancing, I got you.
Great.
I'm serious.
All the things, yeah. Send me everything.
We'll film a podcast there with you and all the Hill Betty shit.
Yeah, whatever we can do to just... unite the Bettys. I'm in.
Well, thank you so much for spending time with us and keep being a badass. And dude, I always say this. I'll end it with this. Anytime I meet somebody like you, I try to tell them what one good compliment. This is the best compliment I can give them is you're the type of female artist I want my daughter idolizing and looking up to. Like, you're a badass.
I don't think there's truly anything kinder that you could say, at least in my opinion.
If you know how much I love my baby, there ain't.
Yeah, thank you.
But
thank you.
You're welcome. And everybody, thank you for listening to the Josh Terry Podcast. We'll catch you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.